it's okay to take a risk in your career to do something that, you know, you really hopefully can enjoy. There's a lot of us who have done it and a lot of us who have built the firms that we're really happy with and that we really love. So I think that the biggest step is being able to take that risk.
Welcome, my friend, to the Conversations for Financial Professionals podcast. I'm your host, Dominique Henderson. And as a veteran of the financial services industry, I was curious to find out why, despite all the good that financial professionals do, that yet the term financial advisor would clear the room so fast at a dinner party. Why was this? And what was this gap between consumers of financial services and the providers of those services? In this podcast, I seek to close this gap by having forward-moving conversations to advance the profession of giving financial advice and provide tools to the next generation of financial professionals to serve their clients at the highest level. You see, as providers of financial services, we have the awesome privilege of partnering with consumers to help change family trees, normalize the creation of wealth, and help the industry as a whole do less harm and more good. So it's time to sit back and enjoy the conversation. For this episode of Conversations for Financial Professionals, we talk with Anjali Jariwala about using your personal story to build a firm specialization. We begin with making the most of what you have. Anjali is the perfect prototypical example of a career changer as she pivoted from internal audit and accounting into financial services. We discuss some of the obstacles she faced when making the leap and how she overcame them. We then pivot to how she built her own firm and what the catalyst was to making her make that decision. We also cover how to embrace your story when making the leap and the advice that she would give to career changers when trying to get started in this profession. We finalize our conversation by talking about where she sees the industry going as it relates to career changers like herself and the future of the financial planning profession. So many nuggets of wisdom inside this talk. I really think you're going to enjoy this episode. So let's sit back and enjoy the conversation. Welcome to another episode of Conversations for Financial Professionals, where we are shaping the next generation of advice. And today, have a good one. I have Anjali Jariwala. You are the founder of Fit Advisors, a financial planning firm serving physicians and business owners virtually across the U.S. Prior to launching your own firm, you spent over 6 years with the Fortune 500 company PricewaterhouseCoopers and 2 years serving high net worth individuals with a large prestigious financial planning firm. During your career, though, you often shared financial advice with family and friends, but began to realize that not only did most of them lack access to the best personal financial information, you also saw that their busy lives meant that they didn't have time to put it all together on their own. Then you decided to make a bigger impact by starting your own firm, and you now utilize your expertise in tax and finance to empower your clients to discover and reach their life goals while building a stable financial future. You also host the Money Checkup podcast, a semi-monthly checkup that discusses the many facets of financial well-being. You were named one of Investment News' top 40 under 40 for 2019, Financial Advisor Magazine's Young Advisor to Watch for 2020, and Investopedia's 100 Top Financial Advisors. You've also been featured in CNBC, Bloomberg, U.S. News and World Report, New York Times, USA Today, Business Insider, Investment News, and more. You also serve on the board of Save a Mother, which is a nonprofit dedicated to developing sustainable healthcare solutions for the poor in India. Welcome to the podcast, my friend.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be on. I know it took a little time for us to get this one scheduled.
Hey, busy moms always get a pass with me. I am so sensitive to that, and really enjoy these conversations. And I think it's going to be really interesting. I think the topic that we have selected today within this theme of the talent pipeline, I think is going to help a lot of people, especially people of color, women. When we talk about using your personal story to build a firm specialization, which is exactly what you've done, I'm really eager to get your thoughts and opinions and perspective on this. So let's dig in. I think I want to kind of bifurcate a little bit this. Let's talk about kind of like making the most of what you have. I from reading your bio and doing a little bit of research, I see technically, and I don't know if you think about yourself this way, but as a career changer from kind of accountancy, internal audit, all that kind of stuff into financial advising, kind of maybe tell us a little bit more of that story and what, I don't know, maybe the impetus that thought, you obviously were having these financial conversations with friends and family and whatnot, but then how you really leveraged your skill set that you built in your prior career in order to just say, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and make the leap.
Yeah. I mean, I think anyone who's a career changer transitioning, it's always a little scary, to be honest. For me, what happened was I was just, you know, I was at PwC. I was in my like fifth year. And I was working, you know, 80 hour weeks during busy season, and busy season felt like it was never ending. And I loved my time there. And when I was in my 20s and young, you know, I could deal with it. But as I was, you know, getting older, I got married, you know, and we were thinking about kids, I was like, I don't know if this is going to be sustainable for me long term. I enjoyed what I did, but the thought, I'm a people person, so I like client focused relationships. So kind of going into like an industry job working for one of my clients wasn't very appealing. And so when I couldn't find anything within my specific, you know, tax accounting career, I decided to like look beyond that. I had a hard time. I definitely didn't want to give up my tax background and knowledge because I felt like I spent so much time between work and education and getting my CPA. And I stumbled across financial planning because my husband, who's a physician, was getting his MBA at the time. And he took a financial planning course taught by a local fee-only advisor who is also a CPA and transitioned from accounting to financial planning. So when I started talking to him, I was like, this seems like a perfect transition for me because I could still work with the client base where my tax knowledge would be helpful. And I think all of us as CFPs know, like, having tax knowledge is always really helpful for our client base. And, you know, I could still have a client-focused relationship, which is what I really wanted. So, you know, I decided to take the CFP coursework while I was still working at PwC. And then eventually I interned at the firm that the advisor owned, and then was able to then secure kind of my first role at the large RIA in Chicago.
Interesting path. So I just want to kind of pause on a point because a lot of people don't do it that way. And when I say don't do it that way, you know, the CFP board, which has done a bang up job, I never want to take anything away from them with everything that they've done to create visibility around the designation. But at the same time, I think some of my younger audience, they tend to go, oh, I'm just going to go in and start taking courses. And like at the end of the course is going to pop out this financial planner that just everybody wants to hire. And I'm just like, that's not typically how it works. And I love the fact that you said you took your coursework while you were still in your current job at Pricewaterhouse. I wonder, like, just the difficulty of that. Maybe speak about that a little bit, because I know career changers are like, man, I don't have enough time in the week to do stuff. And I'm like, well, you got to make time if that's important to you.
Right.
So you can speak to that.
Yeah. The way I was able to make it work is I went reduced when it was not busy season. So I went reduced and I was able to do the CFP course that was on Fridays and Saturdays. So I kind of spent most of my weekends for a year and a half taking the CFP coursework. But I felt like it was important for me to do the coursework to see if this was a profession that I wanted to transition to. So I'm a CPA, I'm a tax person, I'm very technical, so I like to gather all the data and knowledge before I make a decision. So for me, kind of jumping into a new career was really scary. So taking the CFP coursework helped confirm that this was something that I would enjoy and that I would like. And then it made it a lot easier to kind of make that leap into a new profession. But it was still really, really hard. Like my starting salary at the RIA was lower than my salary when I started at PwC 6 years earlier. So it was also a little bit of a humbling experience to start all the way at the bottom again. So that can be difficult as well as a career changer, but it's something, you know, if you want to do it, you just, kind of do what you need to do, because it wasn't like I took the CFP coursework. I'm like, I'm an amazing advisor. Let's do it. Right. You know, I needed to learn all the basics again and go through that process. And so I appreciated the time I had at that RIA, kind of really learning the nitty gritty, and how kind of my intro into planning after the coursework.
Yeah. So you bring up something that I think is, if not the most important, one of maybe two or three questions that people have is, how would I handle the pay cut? Like, and you know, as an advisor myself, and as a coach slash consultant in this space, you know, I don't try to give people the rose colored glasses version of this. I'm like I say, how my wife says, it's like, you either need some financial runway or you need a sponsor or something. You know, you need some type of way to bridge that gap. But I wonder if you could maybe kind of elaborate on this notion of starting over, because you said that, and I totally get what you're saying. Although there is transferable skills, you're learning financial services, client facing, what the financial planning process looks like, how it's marketed to clients, how they absorb that, you know, what the process is on delivery for, you know, the promise that you made for them, all that kind of stuff is new. Maybe there were some parallels, but for the most part, it sounds like you're saying it's new. What were some of the coping skills as you were kind of eating your humble pie, if you will?
I had a very supportive husband, so that was good. And I did actually take on a part-time tax job as well, after I left the RIA and while I was trying to get my firm up and running, just to help with cash flow. But we made sure that we had, you know, at least 2 years of runway for in case it took that or more for, you know, my business and to get things up and running. And then we did make cuts. You know, I tell my clients this who are looking to start a business, we stopped funding retirement for almost 4 years of our life. That eats at me every day. So honestly, the happiest day was when we could fully fund our retirement for the year. And we made cuts. We made cuts to our spending. And, you know, it is a sacrifice that you make. And you want to make sure that you have that runway, because it makes the process a little easier to manage, because a transition can be really hard. And there were times when I was like, oh, let me just go back to like PwC or take an accounting job. And I think if you have the financial burden, it makes it harder to be able to fully commit, because you're always worried about that. So you need to make sure you're setting yourself up in a way that you can manage that transition and manage the lower income for the interim, and that it's not going to kind of create such a burden on you financially that it makes it harder to stick to that career transition.
No,
and I'm pretty conservative, right? So I'm like, I like to save money and put in a bank account. So it was pretty hard for me, much harder for me than my husband, who was like, yeah, it'll be fine.
No, I mean, especially, I don't know where you guys were with growing your family at that point in time. So if, you know, if you got kids and stuff, and I'm sensitive to the fact that I know that when you are a career changer, making that switch, it takes a lot of mental RAM, if you will, just making the decision and considering all the obstacles and the cost and all that kind of stuff. Which is the reason why, you know, I do what I do on the Jumpstart side, because it's like I want to build a community of people that kind of know what it's like. You know, sometimes, you know, your spouse is supportive, but they just don't get it. They're not in the weeds. They don't understand it. They're doing their thing in their career, and they're like, yeah, are you sure this is what you want to do? You know, that kind of deal. So I totally get it. Let's talk about why you actually decided to say, okay, I feel like, or maybe you can even just walk us through when you felt like you had enough of confidence to say, I can do this on my own. Like, and there's a different, you know, amount of people that, or a different group of people that I want to serve, that I feel that I'm called to serve. And just, you know, you can throw this caveat in here if you want to or not, but I know that everybody doesn't need to own their own firm. I totally get that. What was the decision process that you kind of went through, or the decision tree that you leapt off of to say, yeah, I think I want to start my own?
Yeah, I mean, I think like many of us who started our own firm, it was more like we had no other options or choices, to be honest. And that's what happened with me. I was working at the large RIA. It was a more traditional financial planning firm, AUM model, serving high net worth individuals. So most of the client base was pre-retirees and retirees. So, you know, the firm was great in that they were grooming me to become VP and hopefully have my own book of business. But when I was there, I realized that that wasn't a place that I could be successful in, mainly because I couldn't relate to any of those clients. And I honestly didn't feel like that was the client base I really wanted to serve. I wanted to serve people like my husband and I. We're young, we're trying to save, we're trying to make right financial decisions. We have a growing family. And I wanted to serve clients similar to me and my husband because I felt like that's where I had more passion for it, right? And I also wanted to help more people who are like me, you know, people of color, those who kind of have been shunned by more traditional planning firms and things like that. And so what I did was, we were in Chicago at the time, we're now in California, is I started interviewing aggressively. I interviewed at so many different firms, trying to find a firm that was serving a younger client base that didn't have an asset minimum requirement. And I couldn't find one. The smallest minimum requirement I could find was $250,000, which people, a lot of times in when they're, you know, in their, you know, 30s, they're not, they don't have $250K. If they do, it's in an employer retirement account, which you can't directly manage. And so I, you know, felt like I hit a wall. I was like, I don't know what to do. I didn't want to spend another like 6 years at the RIA because I already spent 6 years of my life at a firm knowing that that's not where I wanted to be long term. So as a career changer, it was helpful because I could, I was able to identify more quickly what I like and what I didn't like, and I didn't want to waste time. So that's when I kind of came across XY Planning Network. I talked to Alan Moore and he's like, you should do this. And then he's like, you should talk to Sophia Barra. And she's like, you should do this. And then my husband's like, just do it. Like, he's like, it's probably like the best time possible because we didn't have our daughter yet. We were in Chicago. We had a place we bought a while ago. So our cost of living was still pretty, not too bad. So I decided, okay, I'm going to try it. And, you know, as my husband put it, he's like, you could always get a job, right? He's like, there's always going to be a job available for you. He's like, worst case, you go back to tax. It's not the end of the world. So he's like, why not try it and take that leap? So that's how I kind of made that transition. You know, if there were firms like mine around at the time, I would have loved to have just been an employee because it is a lot of blood, sweat, and tears to start your own business. And, you know, your question of confidence, the confidence was not there when I started. I think it took me like 5 years. My firm is about 7 years old now. It took me probably like year five when I was like, oh, okay, I finally feel like I'm very comfortable in what I do and how I serve my clients. So it's always like a growth and learning process, even for people who are many years in.
Yeah, I love that. That, you know, you wake up year five, people are still paying me to, you know, give them advice. I must be good at this. Like,
yes.
Yeah.
Imposter syndrome.
Yeah, that part. It's so interesting. I think, you know, I was watching Kitsis and Carl, and they were talking about this for a minute. And Carl made the point of, you know, it's almost like, and I don't remember exactly what he said, so I'm paraphrasing, but it was like, you know, fear is basically, you know, what we're dealing with when we talk about imposter syndrome. And he's like, I just invite them to sit in the car on the ride with me. You just got to sit in the back seat. You can't drive. You can't sit in the front with me. You just like, just acknowledge that it's going to be there.
Yes.
And so I love that. I think you bring up so many points of motivation and inspiration for people just because, like, there are going to be some risks. They should be calculated risk, but at the end of the day, like, do you really want to spend time? And you said this so eloquently, like, you didn't want to waste more time. Like, you were like, I'm at this point, I've already wasted years. I don't feel like wasting anymore. And that's what I think people have to challenge themselves with is, are you in a career and you're so safe and comfortable that that's the existence that you want for the rest of your life? Or do you want to try something that you think will give you what you feel like you're wanting or what you're missing, at least when it comes to your purpose and whatnot? How did you figure that part out? And then specifically, how did you figure, okay, this is the people group that I want to work with when it comes to, you know, either vocation or, you know, ethnicity or whatever? How did you figure that out for Fit Advisors?
Yeah, those are great questions. I think part of it is you know, we have to work for a long time. Life expectancy is only getting longer. And so for me, it was really important to make sure that I could either have my own business or work for a company that I can be there or have a career in which I was content and able to work for, you know, until I needed to work, right? So some of it is that I think we see a lot of movement around like FIRE, you know, retire early. And I think a lot of that stems from just like unhappiness in terms of what we're doing, you know, what our day-to-day job looks like. So the nice part about starting my own firm was that I could design it the way I wanted to design it. And what I'll mention is I launched my firm in May, and then 6 months later, we found out we were pregnant. So I have been the mother of a small child ever since I've pretty much started my firm. So it became very apparent to me very quickly that I needed to figure out how to grow a business that was profitable, because I wasn't doing this as a hobby. I wanted it to be a career in which I was making money that I was, you know, content in making, then providing for my household. Because if I wasn't able to do that, then I would transition to something else, right? This wasn't just something for fun. So it was a lot of kind of designing and figuring that out. And, you know, the interesting part was I didn't have to go out and seek the clients I wanted to serve. They sought me out, right? So, you know, earlier in my career when I was targeting physicians, and mainly because my husband's a physician, we have a lot of physician family and friends, so it seemed like a natural niche for me. I was advertising on various physician blog sites, and I would be the only, many times the only woman, the only person of color. So, you know, it was really, I mean, a lot of prospects, I was like, oh, you know, why did you decide to reach out to me? And they're like, oh, because you're like a brown woman. So I definitely wanted to talk to you, right? So, you know, I think you attract the type of people you want to work with, and they seek you out. And I always say that in this career, I've felt like looking like me was a benefit, because there aren't very many people who look like me, and we're trying to serve a very diverse population in which there isn't representation on the financial planning side. We're getting better, but we have a very long way to go. So if you're someone that doesn't look like everyone else, there are people out there who are looking for people like you, right? So it was more just like seeing who I resonated with, seeing who I helped the most. And a lot of my clients are immigrants or children of immigrants. I'm a child of immigrants because, you know, money psychology plays such a big role in the work that we do. I felt like I could really connect with those clients, because when they're like, I know I make this much money, but I have such a hard time spending because my parents never spent this type of money, right? I completely can understand that. And then we can really get to the work of how do we get that person comfortable so that they feel comfortable spending money, even though that is very against how they grew up and culture. So I think it's always evolving in terms of the clients I bring on. And sometimes I bring someone on who's completely different than who I thought, and then I realize there is a lot of similarities there. So some of it is just, it really is more organic. I don't have to try as hard to be like, I want to serve this type of client, and, you know, let me try to find them. You know, after a certain point, they're going to seek you out.
With all the distractions and things vying for your attention on a day-to-day basis, when do you have time to consider what your purpose is? Have you thought about what it is going to take to achieve your goals? After having dozens of conversations with clients, I decided to provide a simple framework on how you can answer those questions. That framework is contained in my book called Assess, Address, and Adjust, a practical guide to becoming unstuck and achieving your goals. Look, if you've ever felt that you're losing the time for money trade and want to start winning in the next 30 days with real practical tips to improve your situation, or if you're not motivated to push through the day because you have a job you don't enjoy, a relationship you're ready to get out of, or just feel like you're not where you want to be in life, this book is for you, my friend. If you're ready to change that uncomfortable level of dissatisfaction that's currently going on in your life, and you want the tools to help you get unstuck, then head on over to domhendersonsr.com/the-unstuck-book. Now, let's get back to the conversation. You bring an interesting perspective to the whole specialization/niche conversation. I think it's the industry for so long, and this is my 21st year in financial services, the industry for so long has tried to fit many a square peg into a round hole to make us all look the same. for various reasons. They have their motives. They want to sell their products and all this other kind of stuff. And not to say that products are bad. It's just, you know, that's why they're doing that, for anybody listening. But then when you start to think about, okay, so in order to differentiate, I need to be different. I need to have a specialty. And that's great too. But then you can kind of almost wind the clock too tight that way too, and not just organically start to attract people, and this is using your word, that you resonate with, like that they get it. And I had Carl Richards on a previous season, and we were kind of talking through that process. And one of the things that came up is, I was like, I think a lot of people would just do well to be genuinely curious in the type of person that is attracted to you in the first place, right? You know, it's like go to Starbucks and you meet a person, you just ask them questions because you're curious about them and you're just trying to see and, you know, find out about them. Start there. Who cares how much money they have? Worry about the qualification part later. That'll probably, you know, settle this stuff out. I was just, before we started recording, I had someone call me and they were like, hey, yeah, I'm interested in booking or scheduling a consultation. And so I'm pulling up my stuff because I'm getting ready for this podcast. So I wasn't really expecting the call. And she goes, yeah, you know, I was just doing a search and I saw your website and I read your reviews. And so I was like, I wanted to reach out. It had nothing to do with skin color. It had nothing to do with CFP. It had to do all with, oh, she read some reviews. And so I just started asking her questions. And I think the point I'm trying to make here, and it sounds like you've done this well, is this is a people business. This is a relationship business that is built on trust. And no one's going to do business with you regardless of how many letters you have behind your name unless they first trust you. and to trust you, they have to like you. And so I think just starting there is such a benefit. What other advice would you give to career changers? Because I think they have such a mountain of information that is thrown at them about, hey, this is what you need to do, and there's this checklist that you got to go through. What would you say? Because I think you've kind of done this, you know, pretty beautifully, if I may say so myself. What would be some of your tips for them?
Yeah, I would, to be honest, I think this career is so perfect for career transitioners, mainly because a lot of what we do is based on life experience. And so you have so much life experience when you had a different career and transitioned over. There's still, even though what I was doing at PwC is different than what I do now, there's so many skills I learned working in that type of environment that I leverage now, you know, how to work with people, how to talk to clients, how to have difficult conversations, how to be heavily detail organized. I'm very detail oriented so it's all these skills that that you can leverage into this career that at first I didn't realize it. And when I look back, you know, I used to tell myself like I wasted so much time at PwC, but in retrospect, PwC gave me the building blocks to really be successful in starting my own firm. I couldn't imagine being 22 right out of school trying to do this, right? I appreciate the fact that I had a career, I had, you know, life experience to build off of. I think that makes a really big difference in what you do. And I think your point about trust is so key. You know, there was a study that came out, and I forgot who did the study, but people pick an advisor majority of the time based on likability. So it's not all the letters after my name. It's not my background. Like a lot of times people are picking us because they like us. So what is it that what do you attract in the other person, right? What are those things, which is so important that you find people to work with that you get along with. And it's not like I have very different client relationships, right? I have some where they've become friends. I have others where it's very professional, but there is relatability there that makes that process a lot easier, because if the trust is not there, it's just so much harder to do the work. And I've had those situations where I brought someone on who wasn't an ideal fit. I was early in my career and I really just was like, well, I could, you know, it'd be nice to just have more revenue coming in. I took that client on. And because I knew from the beginning it wasn't an ideal fit, I felt like the trust wasn't quite there. And then eventually, you know, I ended the relationship because I said, if you can't trust me, you shouldn't be paying me, right? You need to go to someone who you're going to listen to, so you're not going to make bad financial decisions. So I think there's a lot of different things. I think a lot of different careers transition well. You know, Amy, who's on my team, also a career changer, and had no financial experience when she came on board, but so much of what she knew, she's a mom, she has three boys, like it just leverages really well that she's really successful in her role at my firm as well. So, you know, I think it's just really seeing internally what it is you want. What are you good at? What are you not good at? And then building things around that in terms of who you serve. You know, if you're at a firm, you may not have the choice on who you serve all the time. But if you have your own firm, you know, you get to pick. And it's important to pick correctly, even when you feel like you need the revenue, because the relationships in which it's not an ideal fit, those relationships are much harder, and they usually don't end up as successful.
Now, I wonder if you would indulge me on double clicking, allow me to double click on this. You said the person on your team. I think a lot of career changers have an idea, somewhat incorrect idea, on what is marketable skills for a firm owner. And a lot of what I do in Jumpstart is helping them reframe the ideal skill set. And just so people know, like, I didn't talk to you about this. Matter of fact, this is like not even on what I wanted to talk about, but you brought this up and I'm like, what are you looking for when you're adding a team member to the team? You just kind of identify some stuff and you can definitely reiterate that because they're probably qualities that you underscore. And that's the reason why you set them in the first place. But I want people to kind of realize this balance between education and life experience that I think is out of balance, to be quite honest. When a lot of career changers look at this, they look at heavily weighting, they're you know, throwing all their eggs in the basket on the education part. And what I tell them over and over and over, and I was like, I have these conversations all the time, guys, and firm owners, they want you to eventually maybe get the CFP, but that's not the first thing. They're just like, I can teach you the technical stuff. I really like you to come with the other stuff. So maybe you can elaborate that on that a little bit.
Yeah, no, I think that's so important. Obviously, the education is important for your own development. But what I'm looking for is more of those life skills, right? Just because I understand our client base. And so someone who can relate to the client in that respect is so important. I'm really big on details and having all the information. So I need someone who is heavily detail oriented, right? I don't like things getting missed. I do run a pretty tight ship. I'm a nice boss, but I also don't like mistakes. So, you know, like Amy came from a management information systems background. So I knew that she had attention to detail, right? And then the next piece of it is someone who is humble enough to understand that when they come to a small firm or a growing firm, you have to do everything. I'm going to do account paperwork. It is not beneath me, even though I'm the firm owner, right? So being open and willing to understand that you're going to have to wear a lot of hats, but that's important because you're going to really learn every aspect of the business. And then someone who's just personable, right? I mean, in my base, you know, a lot of my clients, I have a very diverse client base. So I definitely would meet someone who understands that, who's receptive to DEI, right? Who's not going to say something that's offensive or whatnot. So it's those things. You know, when I did my hire with Amy, her mom is a financial advisor, a CFP, saw my job posting and told Amy to apply. So her mom has a special place in my heart. And then Alejandra on my team, who started off as my intern and is now with us full time, same thing. I wasn't looking for someone who had all this financial planning knowledge, right? I was looking for the building blocks of someone who I thought would be successful in the firm because I can teach them the skill set. Financial planning is not, I would say it's not technically as difficult as the work I used to do at PwC. That work was really difficult, but it is broad. We have to be a generalist in a certain respect, which being a generalist is difficult for me because I was used to just being good at one very specific thing. So that's why the things like attention to detail, being able to work independently is really important for my firm because we're all virtual. You know, I don't meet with anyone in person. We have clients in 20 states. Alejandra is here in California, but I have still not met her, even though she's been with me for a year. And Amy is in Ohio, right? So, you know, I need self-starters. And I've noticed career changers, especially my career changer moms, are so good at that, right? They know how to manage time well, because I don't care if you're working 9 to 5, right? I just want, as long as things are getting done, I'm totally flexible, because that's how I have to operate, right? If like I was late for our podcast recording this morning because it took longer to get my daughter out the door, and that's just what happens. And so I have to text my clients sometimes and say like, Nyla's crying. I need to push this meeting by 15 minutes. And they're like, that's fine. Don't worry about it. Right. So I think those types of things that career changers have that they may undermine are so important. That ability to adapt, the ability to be flexible, the ability to handle multiple things and work autonomously. I just think that career changers are so good at that because they already have that skill set. That to me is much more important than, you know, the fact that you finish your CFP coursework and whatnot. I mean, it is important, but it's not going to be the driving force on how I make my hires, because I know these other skill sets, which are sometimes harder to find, are more important for me in terms of someone being successful at my firm.
No, it's a great point. I mean, it's not the kind of stuff that most people can articulate on a resume, which is the reason why I'm like, you know, like short little hacks of when you're, you know, they may see this interview and they're like, oh, there's an open position at Fit Advisors. How could I best approach the firm owner, Anjali? Like, I'm like, instead of typing something out, why don't you record a Loom video? Then she gets to see your face on camera, sees that you can kind of handle yourself and articulate. Like, that's probably worth an open versus a, hey, can you send me a, you know, all this other kind of stuff. So anyways.
Yeah, actually, when I was doing my intern hire, I asked everyone to send me a video recording, because just being able to have someone talk through is so much more impactful and helpful than like reading responses on, you know, a Word document.
And then that's a skill set that serves that person pretty well as they develop it, especially if you're an all virtual firm. So, you know, you brought up some things before when you said you interviewed a lot of firms. I think that's another skill that career changers can start to develop, so that you actually know what you're walking into when you're saying, I want to be hired by you. As we bring this thing in for landing, so many great points here, many juicy rabbit trails you've allowed me to kind of hop down. So I appreciate it. What, where do you see the industry going? Like in terms of the talent pipeline, and, you mentioned this before, you know, we're getting better, but it is predominantly still stale, pale, and male. And I say that with all, humbleness and respect, but that's just the reality of our industry. Where do you see this going, and how might maybe industry participants and or, you know, people that want to participate in the industry begin to help that effort from your perspective?
Right. I would say, like, I've been in this career maybe 8 or 9 years now, so not as long as you per se, but I've seen such a big change even like the 8 or 9 years that I've been here or in this profession. There seems to be much more awareness on DEI. Before, it was one of those, oh, it's nice to do, we should be cognizant of it. It's now become like, this is going to help your bottom line, to firms actually putting time, effort, and money into developing that. Not all firms, unfortunately, but the ones that are more progressive, I think hopefully we see more job opportunities opening up for, you know, women and people of color, so that they don't feel like their only option is to start a firm, right? Starting a firm is expensive. You do need a safety net, and that shouldn't be the only option to be successful in this profession. So I'm hoping we start to see more openings at firms that people want to work for, right? My first RIA that I worked at was not a firm that I would say was great for a person of color. I was one of two in a firm that managed over $12 billion, right? So, you know, I'm hoping we see some more change in that. I think we're also going to start to see changes in terms of how firms, the bigger, more established firms are doing planning to work with a younger client base, because a more investment management focused model with light planning doesn't work for a younger client base. And so if there's a need to attract younger advisors and need to attract younger clientele, I think we're going to start to see changes in terms of how those firms are doing planning. And I think technology is just going to continue to not be a disruptor, but, you know, hopefully make our lives as advisors who are more financial planning, you know, comprehensive planning focused lives a little easier so that technology can take care of some of the nitty gritty things that maybe we're doing manually. I don't worry about technology replacing me because, you know, technology can have the conversations I have with my clients. So anyone who's scared of that, I think you can't underestimate the value of having a conversation and a relationship with a human being, not a computer, right? So, you know, those are the things I'm seeing. I'm hopeful. I'm also impatient. So I feel like the changes are very painfully slow. But I love, you know, I love the work you're doing. I love the work that other people are doing to really just like push the needle on this. Because I would love to see our profession be more indicative of the population as a whole, because there is still an imbalance in terms of the diversity. And I'm hoping we see changes in that over the next 5 to 10 years.
No, I would agree with you. A lot of great points there. I think so much work to do. And then the financial services industry as a whole, the machine, if you will, somewhat behind the curve when you kind of look at consumer taste and changes in behavior. I mean, I literally can, you know, Amazon Prime my garden, which is what I'm going to install this weekend. Like, I did that all on Amazon Prime the other day. I didn't have to go to Home Depot because I didn't want to. I think very much so people should not have to bow down at the altar of whatever big brokerage is out there to go get someone that, you know, doesn't look like them and doesn't understand their, you know, different taste and behaviors from a cultural or ethnic standpoint. There should be way more choice if you just look at it like that. So, no, I totally agree. Totally agree. Well, as you know, this is a podcast to empower tomorrow's financial professional with tools to serve their ideal client at the next level. And in that context, do you have any words a wisdom that you would like to leave with the audience?
Yeah, I would say that, you know, it's okay to take a risk in your career to do something that, you know, you really hopefully can enjoy. There's a lot of us who have done it and a lot of us who have built the firms that we're really happy with and that we really love. So I think that the biggest step is being able to take that risk. I'm very risk averse. So that's why I'm giving this advice, because it's very hard for me. I used to like 9-to-5 job, guaranteed salary. So, you know, taking that risk is important. And then finding that community to help you through it. I had, you know, a lot of advisors that are close friends of mine that really helped me through the journey, because it can be very emotional. And if you have a support group, it makes it a lot easier to go through those, you know, down periods. And then you also have a group to celebrate the ups as well.
Love that. Love that. Anjali Jariwala, really, really appreciate your deposit into the Jumpstart community, this conversation for financial professionals, and just wish you the best in the future.
Thank you. It was fun to be on.
All right. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye. I really hope you enjoy this conversation. Before we go, just a few things. The best way to retain what you just learned is to do more than just listen. You first might want to write down your most important takeaway and then give yourself a deadline to apply it. For bonus points, you might also let someone hold you accountable to that deadline. And remember, the only way more people will know about this podcast is if you share it. You can do that by sharing a link to this episode on your social media or by leaving a review on iTunes so that it reaches a wider audience. I'd appreciate if you took the time to do either or both. And finally, if you'd like to learn more about how Jumpstart can help you become a next generation financial professional or partner with you in finding next generation talent for your organization, send us an email at hello@jumpstartcoachinglab.com, just in case you needed to get a pen to write that down. That's hello@jumpstartcoachinglab.com. Bye for now, until our next conversation.